Good afternoon and welcome to the Buckmaster Show from the Green Thing Socolo Village Studio. I'm Dan Shear, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun, and it's Monday, August 29th. Bill and Ann Buckmaster are off enjoying the Great Northwest on another fantastic vacation, so he's handed over the car keys to a few of us. Check out the photos on Bill's Facebook page. He and Ann are both terrific photographers. Bill, if you're listening, I think I can speak for the other guests in saying that we are glad that we can give you a break and just enjoy yourself this week. The Buckmaster Show comes to you live Monday through Friday from noon to 1 p.m., where you can check out all the past shows or the live stream at buckmastershow.com. We start off the week talking to our experts during the Monday political face-off. Today we'll welcome Jeff Rogers and John Munger. And after the break at 12:30, we're going to be talking to Carlos Valles. He is the executive director of the Sahuarita Food Bank and Community Resource Center. And if you haven't heard what's going on down there, you're going to be very surprised. Please join us. If you have a question or comment, you can reach us at 520-790-2040. That's the Buckmaster Show live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And let us remind you that the Monday Political Face-Off is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's specializes in custom frame mirrors, wall art, picture framing, and hanging services and systems. You name it, Moe's has it, and they do it right. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com, and you can find them on Facebook. Okay, we are joined by our commentators, John Munger and Jeff Rogers. It is good to see you both. Hope you both had a great weekend.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Yes, long summer, but it just I still remember my days in Phoenix when it was just far, far worse. I'm still loving it down here all these years later.
Oh, this is great. We've had a great summer. Lots of rain. Fairly cool temperatures.
Yep.
I just came from the Mid-South, you know, Dallas and Memphis and Nashville. It's no hotter here than it is there.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's a lot more humid there.
And it's a lot more humid there.
Yes, my least favorite type of weather is humidity.
Yeah, and I went for a walk 2 days ago in Memphis for a mile and a half and almost got sunstroke.
Oh,
I mean, it was terrible.
It.
It knocked me flat.
Yeah. Yeah, the sun is searing there.
And humidity, yes, unforgiving.
It is bad. So we're going to jump into it here with a few topics. And again, if you want to join us on the live line, please feel free to do that. So, John, I'm going to direct this at you because I'm going to make a statement that you're probably going to disagree with, but I want to hear what you have to say. We had the FBI enter Mar-a-Lago on August 8th. Then the affidavit was released on Friday, and while it was heavily redacted, I'm going to say that it has caused a lot of Republicans to actually pause and maybe consider or reconsider their support of the former president. Would you say that's accurate?
No, I don't think that's accurate at all. I don't think there's anything in it. Was number one, it was over half redacted.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what it really was all about. The people that have read it, and I have not, but seem to say that it's mostly indicates that the big dispute is that the fact that he had some documents and the archivists want them back, that seems to be the big deal. But I didn't see enough, hear enough about it to indicate that anybody's change their position one way or the other.
But we do know that the types of documents that were in there and that had been taken out of Mar-a-Lago in February had a lot of documents that were marked confidential or top secret. They could have defense material in there. I mean, it's a little reckless. Can we
say
that?
Well, what I read was that there's nothing about nuclear weapons there. And Trump, of course, is claiming, and I don't know whether it's true or not, that what he had, number one, was that he declassified, number two, a number of the prior presidents also had some classified documents.
Jeff?
So who knows? I don't think anybody's gotten terribly excited about it.
We're going to it'll keep rolling out. Jeff, no big deal?
Well, it's a real big deal. And not only that, these don't have to be classified documents for it to be against the law for him to possess them. This is a really simple, direct case. It's a lot like a drug case, a dangerous drug case, where you find a defendant in possession of the dangerous drugs that they're not entitled to have. And that's the end of the case. This doesn't it's not like some of the more complex kinds of cases that could arise out of the January 6th riots, where you're going to have to show a willfulness or an intention that are kind of difficult to infer from you know various actions, and those are a lot tougher for prosecutors to bring. I'm not saying they won't bring those because I think they're likely to, but this one is a real simple cut and dry case from a prosecution perspective. I mean, your youngest prosecutor right out of law school can try this case and win it in a heartbeat. So I think Trump's got himself finally into something that is beyond his ability to delay and to obfuscate. I think we're gonna see the chickens come home to roost. Does he deserve to go to prison? I don't know. I'd like to see him get a prison sentence and then have it commuted so that we don't have the embarrassment of having a former president in prison. But getting a felony conviction of him would be a good thing. It would show us that we have once again become a nation of laws and not a nation that worships a cult of personality.
Well, I would differ with Jeff. Number one, Jeff's big comment is it's like a drug case where you have the drugs that you're not entitled to have. And that the big question here was, number one, was Trump entitled to have these? And that isn't resolved one way or the other. We don't know whether they were declassified.
Doesn't
number
matter.
Two, yes, it does matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
Yes, it does,
actually,
Jeff.
All that does, John, is it increases the federal sentencing guidelines. If they're non-classified documents, he's facing about 5 years with a 10-year maximum. If they are top secret or classified documents, he's facing somewhere between 7.5 to 9.5 years in prison, according to the federal sentencing guidelines.
Jeff, there are substantial, very substantive legal authorities, constitutional lawyers who say there just is nothing here. There was a law clerk that made some comments, one of Gorsuch's previous law clerks, who said there just isn't anything here. He's looked at it carefully. Jeff wants so bad and is predicting for 5 years now that Trump's going to jail.
While he was president, I wasn't.
That he's going to get indicted by this group or that group, and it hasn't happened. We'll see what happens, but the facts aren't all in yet. And for us to sit around and get all excited about it with all the facts being in and start to speculate about who's going to jail and who's not, I would just remind people that the facts aren't in yet. We honestly don't know. I'm not trying to defend Trump that way, but I can't tell you, and Jeff can't tell you, what's there. We do know that other presidents have documents that were government documents, and they have had them. We do know that in June, the government prosecutors came to Trump and said they came into Mar-a-Lago, and they went in and physically looked at the basement box cage where the documents were. They looked at it, and we do know that they never once after that.
They subpoenaed those documents, and he refused to turn them over.
Let me finish. They went in and looked at the documents. They left them there, told him to put another lock on it, and never contacted him again, and all of a sudden, without further comment, raided his house. Now, you juxtapose that. I mean, they're supposed to do only the least necessary invasion. They could have called him up and said, hey, we were there in June and we saw you have these documents. Why don't you turn them over to us? But they didn't do that. They left him there and instead raided his house. Now, let's juxtapose that to Hillary Clinton, who destroys 33,000 classified documents and nothing happens to her. There is unequal justice in this country. And we know that other presidents have documents. Nothing's happened to them. this is clearly an attack on Trump. I'm not ready to say whether there's a prosecutable offense or not, because the facts simply aren't in. But for Jeff to sit here and say, it's an easy slam dunk case, no, it's just not.
Well, good advice to wait and see what happens, because there's a lot to happen. But Jeff, we're going to give you the last word on this.
Well, you know, the fact is that they not only tried to get these boxes from him on numerous different occasions through unofficial and official means, but they finally sent a subpoena, a grand jury subpoena to him to produce these records, and he and his lawyers refused. And his lawyer, one of them, lied, or hopefully he lied at the request of Donald Trump and didn't lie on his own behalf, but saying there were no further documents there. And so now we know, of course, there are lots more documents. There's hundreds and hundreds of documents, many of them top secret.
Unless they've been declassified.
It doesn't matter if they've been declassified, John. That's not the law. The law on all three of these potential charges, you're wrong. That's what I do for a living, John. I'm telling you, they don't have to be classified.
Okay, let's Jeff finish.
And so the fact is that this is an easy case. Now is it a prudential case? I mean, that's what we have to decide is, you know, is this worth prosecuting a former president for, which is a judgment issue. But clearly, this is an easy crime to prove.
Okay. We are with John Munger and Jeff Rogers on the Monday Political Face-Off. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolo Village Studio. And our live line is made possible by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate, and Property Management. This is a good time to remind you that this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. They simply are the best. You can find Mona's on the northeastern corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's is open for breakfast and lunch. Treat yourself to some of their fine offerings, including that famous Danish Kringle. Find them at monasdanishbakery.com or go to buckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Tom Sullivan here, inviting you to join the rest of us who spend every weeknight from 7 to 10 with the Tom Sullivan Show on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Oh, here we go. Welcome back to the Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com and on Facebook. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Saurita Sun, sitting in for Bill. And you've joined us in the middle of the Monday Political Face-Off with John Munger and Jeff Rogers. We're going to turn our attention to the student loan forgiveness program, I guess, is how you might word it. Some consider it like a great campaign strategy for the Democrats. But Jeff, I'm going to give you the first word on this. How can you defend a half trillion, three quarters trillion, maybe even $1 trillion basic giveaway when people had signed on the dotted line that they would pay back these loans?
Well, it's a thorny problem that we've had for a long time, this mounting school debt. And I would have liked to have seen something more comprehensive that took into account what tuition costs at your average public school, because when we look at inflation-adjusted dollars and we adjust those dollars for all the inflation over the past 30 years, forget about it. Education has skyrocketed. It's almost 10 times what it would be, and had it just kept up with inflation. And so, you know, this is a real problem, and the more we kind of feed government loans and Pell Grants into institutions, the more these institutions continue to raise tuition. And so we're basically, as a federal government and a taxpayer, subsidizing these institutions in a backward fashion instead of the direct fashion that we used to through the legislature. And so it's a significant problem. And there are a lot of people suffering, and a lot of people, the vast majority of these people that are going to get full relief are going to be people who have didn't finish a degree. And there's also a lot of scandalous behavior on behalf of particularly private schools, but even some public schools, where they lure people into these loans and people, you know, you got people going on to Social Security right now who haven't exhausted their student loans. So I'm all in favor of something of this nature. You know, where the problem is getting into the details. I think he probably should have lowered the amount of income that you could have and still get this forgiveness to maybe around less than 100,000. People making 125 as a single person or 250 as a family. That seems kind of generous. I mean, I know that he wanted to address what we generally refer to as the middle class, and that is pretty middle class earnings, but it's kind of upper middle class earnings. And so I would have liked to have seen it focused a little bit more on people earning less money. But there are people, and there are other direct ways to handle this that I've advocated for in the past many times, and that is just make it subject, just take out, and this, and you got to have Congress's help to do this, is take this that bankruptcy off the table and say, look, you know, this is the one debt you can't discharge in bankruptcy. Why the heck is that? You know, other than taxes. So why can't this be discharged in bankruptcy, just like some failed businessman who runs $1 million business and, you know, loses everything? He can discharge it in bankruptcy.
Well, John, some people would say that what the president was trying to address was some way to get more Democratic votes in November.
That's all he's trying to do is buy Democratic votes. And look, he's leaving people that have saved for college for their kids. Instead of buying boats and fancy televisions and new cars, they've saved for education. And he's screwed them. They've been cheated. And the people that have been profligate with their money and gone off and done things they shouldn't have done and therefore don't have any money to pay for their college, the kids' college education, or can't even assist their kids, that's just ridiculous. How about the people that have paid this? How about the that have paid it already? How about the people, the two-thirds of the public, who don't want to go to college? And they get to pay for these college education for, you know, family studies and things that aren't going anyplace. And all of these administrators in these schools across the country. Jeff is right. The universities have taken advantage. The reason that we have these inflated costs, and it is about 10 times the normal inflation, the reason that's happened is that these colleges, every time the government gives out money, the government to students, these colleges get the students in, and they just raise tuition, so the students have to borrow more money, and they put the cost of the administration of these colleges on the backs of students. That is wrong. That's what needs to be corrected. But just giving away money and lowering the cost of going to college, but just giving away the money to people who have contracted to pay it back, don't want to pay it back, don't feel like it today, and let the people who don't want to go to college pay for it, or who have already paid for it, is ridiculous. It's unfair, and it's just a blatant Democratic attempt to buy votes.
Jeff, I think we can all agree that higher education is important, but are the university budgets bloated?
Well, I'm not sure I would call them bloated, but I would certainly say that and John was on the Board of Regents, for God's sakes. He knows this as well as anybody. I think that tuition is just way, way, way too high. And where we cut education to get the tuition down is beyond my expertise. But, some cuts have to be made somewhere, because it's just getting to be where middle class people can't afford to go to college. And unless they rack up these huge loans, and that nobody should live like that. The people that I think, may be more bothered by this than the people John was talking about, which, some people can afford to pay their loans. Some people, have difficulty making them. But, there are some people who probably think to themselves, well, I did a plumber's apprenticeship and, I didn't take out any loans and I didn't go to college. And, now some of my tax dollars are going to be used to, pay back student loans of people who went to college and didn't, obviously succeed enough to pay back their loans. And so those are kind of the people that, sort of your hardworking people there, or as one radio host whose name escapes me, the people who come home and shower after work, not before work.
Yeah, it's just unfair. And, it's gotten to be where we have, we're just giving away money to everybody, and we wonder why we have so many people who don't go back to work. It's gotten to be where every place you look, you get free stuff. And if you just decide not to pay it back long enough, you're going to get a break. And that ethic has to end in this country. If you contract for a debt, you need to pay it.
Okay, John, I'm going to stick with you on this next topic. California has announced plans to phase out gas-powered cars, the sale of those, completely by 2035. Good idea?
It's a ridiculous idea. I mean, we're all for getting renewable energy. But they aren't going to be able to make it, number one. Number two, they're going too fast. We need to transition, but you can't put artificial deadlines on it and have it work. I mean, the fact of the matter is what you're going to end up with is the value of used gasoline vehicles is going to go skyrocket, because number one, you can't even buy an electric car very easily today.
Can't buy any car very easily today.
they're months behind in delivering these cars. You can't get them. And so it's just unrealistic. I'm all for moving forward in that. But the prudent thing to do is do it over a reasonable period of time. And doing it in 13 years is not a reasonable period of time. It's unrealistic. California already, I mean, they want to use electric vehicles. They already don't have enough electricity to keep their lights on and their air conditioning going in the summer. They're already out of electricity. People don't realize that California is buying electricity from other states, including Arizona. California doesn't have enough they've shut down their natural gas power plants and their oil-based power plants because they want to do this, but you can't do it that fast, and that's the problem. It's a great goal, but it's unrealistic to do it that fast. You need to be reasonable. You can't be radical about it.
Jeff, we have less than a minute left, but give you the final word on this. Good plan, but just not good execution?
Well, I think that's probably as good a way to put it as any. I think that electric vehicles are still too expensive. I mean, there's the Nissan Leaf you can maybe get for a reasonable price, but most of them, are quite a bit higher priced vehicles that a lot of people aren't going to be able to afford. And so I'm not sure the market is really there yet, and it's almost like the policy is out ahead of the marketplace and what we can provide in the way of affordable electric vehicles. I mean, I'd like to have one, but I'm not willing to pay $50,000 for one, and I'm certainly not willing to buy one from Elon Musk, but we need to move in that direction. But I think John and I are probably in agreement that this is a little too fast.
Okay, that is going to wrap up the Monday. Okay, that is going to wrap up our Monday Political Face-Off, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Meeting all your custom framing needs and more since 1984. That's Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com. And you can find them on Facebook. My thanks to Jeff and John. You guys make it a great week. This is the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolo Village Studio. And when we return, you're invited to join us on the live line, made possible by Rincon Ventures at 790-2040. We're going to be joined by Carlos Valles, Executive Director of the Sarita Food Bank and Community Resource Center. We'll be right back.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
You're listening to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Shear, sitting in for Bill, who's up in Oregon getting a bit of R&R with his wife, Ann. Check out their updates with a lot of photos on his Facebook page. Our friends over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, would also like to host you at their awesome vacation spot just 3 hours east of Tucson. There is a lot to do in Silver City and Grant County, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do and great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. In studio, we have Carlos Valles. He is the executive director of the Sarita Food Bank and Community Resource Center. It's down in my neck of the woods. Carlos, welcome.
Thank you, Dan.
I'm rarely at a loss for words. People can tell you that. However, watching what has been unfolding at what used to be a food pantry in Sahuarita has truly been remarkable. You recently opened up a brand new, build it up from the dirt, 14,000 square foot facility. And I have to quote the board president, Penny Pessel, who said, "If you dream big, it can come true." And sure enough, this has happened. So we're going to get into that here in just a minute, but and how it's funded and what the plans are going forward. And I know there are a lot of them. But first, I want to dig into a little bit of your background. Tell us about Carlos Valles.
Yeah, Dan, again, thank you for this opportunity. So I served some time in the Air Force, and Davis-Monthan was my last assignment. So my wife and I, we tend to do a lot of outdoor type things, so we decided to stay in the area. And I decided to go back to school, and I just got back. There was a calling for me to go into the nonprofit world, so here I am today. I saw an advertisement for this position, and I applied for it almost 4 years ago. So yeah. It's been great ever since.
Wow. And as I recall, right around that time, you were you guys had twins.
Yeah. So I'll share a little insight. So when I was interviewed by the outgoing executive director and our board treasurer, they showed me a closet, and I said, I could do this. Fast forward a week later. It was anything but. And then fast forward 3 years later, 2 years later, it's been quite a challenge, especially the last couple of years with the pandemic. We set all-time highs through our food distribution.
Yes.
We were really needed in the community.
Wow. And it has been quite a couple of years. I'm going to get into that in a little bit, but I really want to get to the highlight here. And if I could take people back to, I believe it was 2015, there was a 99 project bond request. There were seven questions on it for Pima County and helping build a food bank in Sahuarita, because this was being housed at a church, was on that. And all of those bonds, much to the chagrin of a lot of people, and surprise to almost all of us, went down in flames big time. This was on it. It was, I will tell you, out of those 99 projects, it was one of the very few worthy ones, if I may get political for a moment. But then the thought was, you know what, we still need this, and we're going to make it happen. And that's what happened over the last few years, this thing that was plotted out and built, and it opened 14,300 square feet. Tell us what is in there.
Yeah, so when they think of our organization, people think we're just giving food. Yes, that is true. But the last few years, we've established a community resource center. While we believe in providing for the emergency, the immediate need, which is food, we also believe that there are many people that want economic sustainment. So with the Community Resource Center, we've worked with partners in the community, so that way we're not trying to invent everything, and we can bring resources down to people in our community. So everything from workforce development to health and nutrition and family support, we're really ramping up the Community Resource Center. So with the workforce development, it's exactly as what it states, is we're helping people find opportunities. Right now it seems like there's a big need of people everywhere. So we're trying to bridge the clients that are coming to the food bank with opportunities.
And so we're talking about computer classes. We're talking about what else within these walls is happening, or is there a plan to happen?
Yeah, so we've recently started entry-level basic computer classes such as Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and even using email. A lot of people that are coming to the food bank, they might have a job, but they might not know how to use email. So we're going to arm them with these tools so that way they can promote from within or even look for other opportunities.
And if you're a person like me who uses the computer all day long, this stuff is almost second nature. But there are people whose jobs do not put them in front of a computer, but there are opportunities for them to get jobs where they would be in front of a computer. The basics are crucial.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's let's say, even basic inventory management. Instead of doing inventory by hand, now you can use a system and not only help yourself, but also streamline the operations in the business that you're working.
And so really, if you help people tap their potential, that leads to self-sufficiency.
Exactly. And that's the component, is that we don't want to just feed people, but we want to feed the whole person, the family, so that way they can succeed. And you know, as we've had from all political sides, people agree with this model because everyone wants to see everyone succeed in the community.
And we hear that a lot from nonprofits. You know, maybe in this case it would be, yeah, we want to put the food bank out of business. It'll never be out of business. The hungry will always be with us. We know this, but what you have going on there is very real. I mean, we've seen it, and we're just still in the early stages of it, that people are being helped one at a time, and they're being sent out better equipped to be able to tackle this very changing world that we're in.
Yeah, we've actually helped people, clients that came in, no jobs, scraping by with food, and then we've connected them with our CRC director or our partners, and got them trained, educated, and even connected into the workforce, so that way they can be out there on their own without the worry of knowing that, basically, do I have to feed my family? What am I going to have tomorrow? And we're still going to help them out. So we believe that coaches and mentors are part of the process, helping people succeed.
And so some of what you've also done is you've been working with the schools to find out that, you know, you don't want to do the same thing that they're doing. You've been dealing with employers. What do you need? What do you need? And then you're helping, you're tailoring your programs to meet some of those needs. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Again, we don't want to duplicate anything. We don't want to train people in jobs that are non-existent. So we work with local employers, and we find them those opportunities that do exist.
Okay, and what about things like health and nutrition classes, parenting classes? Is this all part of it? Is this the plan?
Yeah, so we've recently bridged a partnership with Valley Assistant Services. So we have a diabetes program, and the health component to that is educating people, and even, you know, even the families and the kids, because it seems like we've noticed that the families are more concerned than the individual about eating healthy. So we want to make sure that families are coming in, they're eating healthy, so that way they're not worried about missing work or other preventable things.
You know, it's, again, second nature for some of us that you give your kids apples, not Cheetos. For others, you give them whatever happens to be in the house, and maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, we do time to time. We do provide sweets and other things. Mm-hmm. We will admit that we do provide because, you know, after all, people are human beings, and people still have a sweet tooth. So while we do,
I like that.
While we do promote the healthy eating, we do limit some of these sugar items.
Okay, you mentioned the word mentor, and we are going to get back to that because you're involving lots of people in our community with what you're doing there. But we are right now going to take a quick break. This is the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolo Village Studio with our guest Carlos Valles of the Sarita Food Bank and Community Resource Center. Join us on the live line, made possible by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be back in a minute.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Kate Delaney. Join me tonight for a conversation about what's happening in the world that affects you. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Green Things is on a gorgeous 13-acre site that's also home to Socolo Village and all of their fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things on River Road, just west of Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsaz.com and SocoloVillage.com. We are in studio with Carlos Valles of the Sahuarita Food Bank and Community Resource Center, and incredible things going on down there. You mentioned mentors earlier, which says to me you're reaching into this very rich community of Green Valley and Sarita and tapping people who have some incredible skills who can help out. How does this work?
So one of the big things is if somebody comes in asking for help beyond the food piece, we want to connect them with a mentor. Somebody might not be an expert, but we'll guide them, we'll get them the answers. So that way they're not left out and people will give up. And it just does not help people break out of that cycle.
Right. And great idea. And I hope it works and people can contact you if they're interested in helping out, I'm sure. This food bank and resource center, you walk in there and it just doesn't look like a typical food bank. I almost feel weird calling it a food bank. It looks like a grocery store.
Yeah, one of the big things that we envisioned was the big thing is the dignity. We want people to come in feeling welcomed. We're not just giving them a handout, not just a box of food of things that they don't want. So two things that we've noticed. The big thing is that people are not selecting things that they do not want. So we're eliminating things in the landfill. So other people might enjoy those types of things. In the winter season, fall winter season here, we get a lot of different types of squash. So some people get squashed out and others love squash. So, we believe that people should have the opportunity to select. And so that's why we envision the grocery store concept model. So people select, they get a shopping list based on the family size and they select the items that they want.
I watched this thing go up literally from the dirt up, and I want to give a shout out to Good Shepherd United Church of Christ, which is what housed the original food pantry and then the food bank for years and years. And I swear every square inch of that church was just filled with some sort of food product because it kind of taken over everything. And so I'm sure they're but you're right. Yeah. Next door, and they have supported you from the beginning.
Yeah, 2009 was a start. When the pandemic hit, we basically took over the church, and we had the Arizona National Guard that was deployed to us for 18 months.
Right.
And we were down to approximately 18 volunteers, and we were feeding close to 500 families a week. And it was difficult. So the Arizona National Guard came in, helped support the community. And I'm forever thankful for the support.
And I tell you, they identified some efficiencies and they got people going through there because, of course, during the pandemic, you didn't have people actually coming into the building. You had like a drive-through thing.
Yeah. So if you think of a fast food type place, we bought a intercom system. We had a camera. So we were still greeting people, just not face-to-face. We streamlined that operation that when we opened the new facility, people were sad to see that go away because we were so efficient. But everyone understood that we got to press forward and go to this time.
Those National Guard volunteers were just crucial, and they came in at exactly the right time. Because it's Green Valley, you draw some of your volunteers from there, a lot of them. It was an older volunteer corps, and a lot of them had concerns about COVID and didn't want to be exposed to it. Plus, you know, in the summer, volunteer ranks always go down.
Yeah, I feel bad. The young guys and women that were there, they were out helping us, parking lot, 110 degrees, 115 degrees. But they had a great time, and we even had their leadership come down multiple times from Phoenix and just give us the kudos of everything what we were doing in the community.
And we had some concerns because there were people who were just staying at home because of fears. And while on one hand you had more people coming in for help for whatever reasons, maybe they lost their jobs or something, on the other hand, there were some people who disappeared, and we kind of wondered, okay, what's going on with them? So you guys had quite a bit of outreach going on then, didn't you?
Yeah. We never disconnected with anyone. Just weekly, monthly calls with all of our volunteers. And, you know, even our clients, because at points we had clients that were coming in routinely, and we want to just make sure that, A, they're okay, B, maybe they've gotten a job, or they moved away. We just wanted to understand why they were no longer coming
right
to the food bank.
Well, and this is Green Valley and Sahuarita watching out for its own, and it was a really great community effort. But during the whole pandemic, you're trying to build this facility.
Yeah, that was it was a big challenge, and it seemed like costs of everything went up, and now we're I don't even want to think of what we would be paying today I met with our kitchen guy last week, and he said, you know, you would have easily paid double what you would have paid last year. So now we're actually experiencing numbers that are mirroring the pandemic. So we're approaching 500 families again a week.
Wow, incredible. And so how are donations currently right now? And I know you take food donations. We actually have a bin right now in our lobby at our newspaper, and we do have two food banks. The Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona operates one for Green Valley and Amado. So we are involved in this, but frankly, cash donations can go a lot further because in your hands, you have a lot of buying power.
Exactly. Just because we buy in bulk, we've negotiated with our suppliers. So we will gladly accept cash, but we always accept food donations. And I want to remind people that whatever food bank or food pantry that's around you, food is needed around the year, not just around the holidays. So we do have the big holiday pushes, but around this time of year, it's rather low. So I think there's more of an opportunity to do something impactful in the community right now.
What are those go-to products that you need all the time? I'm going to guess that peanut butter is one of them.
Anything shelf stable, high protein items, canned veggies, peanut butter, canned meat items, pastas, beans, anything that can be put on a shelf.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but the sell-by date is not a law. You'll take things that are after that.
Yeah, that's just a sell-by date that's I don't know where that code came from, but through the USDA website, you can actually find that information, the actual expiration past that sell-by date.
Okay, so you'll take stuff you'll take stuff for...
And you know, even if it's not good, we have relationships with local pig farmers, so we provide them these food items, and then in turn, they provide us with fresh eggs, so we're resourceful with anything we receive.
And I got to say, and I greatly admire this about the organization, is that during the building of this new facility, I don't know that there was one penny wasted. It was everything had to earn its way into that building.
Everything, yeah.
And because you're very cognizant of the fact that you're dealing with other people's money, and you get grants, and you are just very careful, and ultimately that will pay off for the clients. You guys did a great job on this thing.
Oh, thank you. And if you're in Southern Arizona, I invite you to come for a tour of our food bank and the Community Resource Center, so that way you can see everything that we're doing with our partners. And I want to take this opportunity to thank some of our partners. Pima County, we have a program coordinator with the Workforce Development who's helping us with the mission. Valley Assistance Services, who's also helping with some wraparound services. The town of Sahuarita, especially the Economic Development Department, because we're working to bridge that gap to get people jobs. Excuse me. And then also the United Way with the various programs and some of the funding that they're doing. And then also, I'm a veteran, so we recently crossed paths with a commander that came from Seattle from the Disabled American Veterans. And up to today, he's up to 32 veterans as he's helped out with submitting disability claims. So our goal is to offer wraparound services because it's really, really needed in our community.
Okay, less than a minute here, but I do want to hit the very big reality of inflation right now and how it is affecting your operations day to day, everything from gas costs to food to what we talked about. The building would have been double the price when I
easily,
absolutely
yeah.
believe that. Inflation itself regarding everything else.
Yeah, we do have a budget, so we do buy milk and eggs because we believe that's a staple item that all families should have. And with the rising costs of fuel and everything else, we've not had to limit milk and eggs to either milk or eggs. So before we were paying $2.50, now we're paying almost $5 for a dozen eggs. And it's just doubled our budget. It just seems in just a matter of months. So these are just crazy times. And for all the seniors that we're serving with fixed incomes, they're coming in and they're new clients.
Very quickly, where can people find out more?
So they can go to our website, sahuaritafoodbank.org. That's S-A-H-U-A-R-I-T-A, foodbank.org. Or they can telephone us at 520-777-7675.
Very good. Our thanks to Carlos Valles of the Sahuarita Food Bank and Community Resource Center. You can learn more at those places he just pointed out there. Don't forget to check out Bill's Facebook photos from the Central Oregon coast. And, of course, all the shows are archived at buckmastershow.com. I'll see you again on Friday. Thank you.